I have
current geek.
Welcome to Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the Meetings of the Frog Pants All Stars, Geeks of the World, and you, to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson. That's Tom Merritt. Hello, Tom Merritt.
Hello, Scott Johnson. I am ready to take on the weekend and kick it off right with Current Geek.
Oh, good. I was ready to just jump right into this intro. I wasn't wasting any time. It's like...
No time to waste. We've got lives to live.
That's right. Do you ever feel like in the world of podcasting, we have like these rituals we go through at the top and bottom of shows? It's always like this... Tell us more about what people can find you on the internet. We always say that. There's like these things we can't shake. So I thought
went away to another country and you came back with a whole new perspective, Scott.
It is like that. Thanks everybody for letting us have the week off. I was in lovely Cancun, Mexico, had a wonderful time, a real vacation for once. And now I'm back and I'm excited to be here. And it's Friday and we have a guest. Let's get right into it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show, Richard Stroffolino, who is rich from Cleveland, from sunny Cleveland.
Lovely Cleveland.
You may have heard that like a ton of times over the last, I don't know,
10
years or so.
There are many Clevelands. Rich is from the lovely one.
Yeah, the lovely Cleveland. Not the one that Len Peralta's from. He's from the dirty.
There are many Clevelands. This one is mine.
Rich, welcome to the show, man. Thanks for being on.
Thanks for having me, guys.
We're excited to have you, and we'll talk a little bit more about what you've got going on these days a little bit later in the show. But to start things off, like is the tradition... The top stuff.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom?
By the way, in relation to our little bumper there, I believe it's April 5th, April 5th or 6th. I'm a little fuzzy right now on the date. Secretary of Commerce Herbert Hoover has an entry in the Year in Tech history.
Oh, my. What was his contribution? Is it a secret?
I don't know. Go buy the Year in Tech in history and look it up.
All right.
You can find out.
That's great.
Or watch for the post at TomMerritt.com on April 5th.
Lovely.
Hey, Diablo 2. Remember that? Remember
yeah.
when that was released?
Yeah.
That was the day after my birthday in the year 2000.
It seems like it forever ago. A long time.
I was dreaming of dating a girl named Eileen Rivera from ZDTV Radio, but she wouldn't give me the time of day. Things were different. and yet, they're still patching Diablo 2. Blizzard issued 1.14a, a new patch for Diablo 2 that fixes some system glitches caused by modern operating systems. Also a new installer for OS 10. And this is the first Diablo 2 patch since 2011. You may remember 2011. That was back when Barack Obama was president.
Ah, yes. The heady days of the Obama presidency. So this coincided with yet another weird move on Blizzard's part. They also put out that same week a patch to Warcraft 3, which hadn't been patched in like 10 or 12 years. So they had they'd kind of come out of nowhere with both of these patches, and I've got a theory about it. I shared it a bit on the instance this morning, but I'll reiterate here just briefly. I think that they are making an attempt to, in some cases free, in some cases pay, but to bring all of their games, both new and legacy, under the same simple-to-use launcher umbrella and basically create an ecosystem, as they already kind of have with their modern games on Battle.net, but to create a place where you can go and just get whatever nostalgic fix you want, whatever modern fix you want. Come May, you'll be able to play Overwatch. Right now, you can get into whatever you want that's out. They just want to have this big, happy, you know, little party tent with all of their stuff in there. Rich is a little weird, right? To go this long and suddenly patch it?
Here's the important question. When I go to install it, will it play like a terrible dial-up tone? Like I did when I patched it the last time in 2001 or whenever the last time I played Diablo 2. Like, I love that they paid people to do this.
Yeah.
It just boggles my mind.
They even have a
launching
guy there.
Trumpet Windsock.
Yeah.
They have Kim, don't pick up the phone for the next half hour. I'm trying to patch this
I'm patching
thing.
Diablo 2.
Yeah. That happened a lot in my house, actually. But they have a guy there now who's, and I wish I had his name handy, but I don't, but somebody who is entirely in charge of their retro games or their older games, and he's called something head of classic games division something. So it's a little bit draped in
so
mystery.
So he handles things like Warcraft 3, Diablo 2, World of Warcraft.
Yeah, I was gonna say at some point World of Warcraft enters into that classic status, but like,
I mean,
you know,
10 years old.
There's also Lost Vikings, and there's, you know, Rock.
Yeah, I've been
racing.
Waiting for my Lost Vikings patch. When's that coming?
Yeah, actually, you can actually go get that right now for free, I believe. That and Rock and Roll Racing are both free.
Doesn't need a patch. That's how good Lost Vikings is.
Perfection.
Yeah, but also this could just be simply, hey, we made, you know, Blizzard's always expressed openly that they don't make video games they have that have a shelf life. They want to support them for life, really. And this could just be them saying, yep, Windows 10, OS 10, everything has kind of gone well beyond what it was, and now we've got real problems, so let's not make our users jump through a bunch of hoops. Let's at least, you know, put out a version that they can play. And it could be that simple, but I see a big, wider controversy here. Not a controversy, necessarily,
although it could be. I'm thinking you're right, that there's some kind of special something for the classic games coming. Does feel like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, like some kind of paid service maybe or some.
Could be. I mean, at the very least, like this morning, we theorized that they could just keep charging $10 a pop for older games, and that doesn't seem like much to people's wallets, but it's still revenue on games that, you know, haven't been quote unquote relevant for 15 years. So it's you know, and Blizzard has the ability
could
to
they
do
make
they make what?
Tablet versions of these?
Possibly.
What?
I mean, you could get away
with
go ahead.
Well, Diablo 2, so like point and clicky. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you could easily adapt that for a handheld interface.
The only weird bit about that would be there's so many games on mobile now, and I know this because I try them all because I love them all. But there are so many action RPGs that have their roots in Diablo, like they're mostly Diablo knockoffs on iOS and Android, and I don't know how it would hold up. Like, they'd have to do some work on it. So maybe that stuff's in the works, though. If there's any video game company in the business who has the right to pull from the nostalgia at a level that they do, it's them. Like, they've got more people invested in their older stuff than maybe anybody else in the business. So to me, it makes sense. You know, bring it to the masses. If you didn't get it before, now's your chance.
I kind of feel like it's a weird perception thing where I'm like, $10 for a desktop game. Mm-hmm. Why, I can get better games for $5 on a Steam discount. But then you say $10 for a tablet game, I'm like, oh yeah, that's normal price.
Right. No, you could see that. It's, but it's weird. It's also just, I said this morning too. It's like, well, maybe they'll bring them all for free. It'll just be a reason to have the launcher because you'll have these old games for free. Patrick argued with me.
All you can eat Blizzard Pass.
Yeah, and keep going back for more. And Patrick argued with me on that. He says, if they'll make money as long as they can make money. And I know, right? That's weird that Patrick would argue on a point. How strange of him. But anyway, we'll see. It's an interesting move. Came out of nowhere. Blizzard continues to wow their player base with weird decisions.
Freelance video editor and writer Peter Salome has started the Walk of Life project at WOLproject.com. If you haven't heard of this, are probably thinking, oh, is this a charity? Well, who am I going to help? The Walk of Life is going to get people walking again. Its aim is to show that every movie ending is improved by replacing the closing theme with Dire Straits' The Walk of Life. Mm. The project was inspired when a friend said Walk of Life would be the perfect funeral song.
So I watched this, and whenever I watch these things, I just think, oh, come on. Sure, maybe, whatever. She's totally right. They're all better with it. Every single one of them.
I had the same thing. I was like, how good could it really be? Blade Runner is crazy good.
Yep, it's good. The Mad Max Fury Road one is good. And I love that movie, so you'd think I'd be a little more picky there. I think it works out really well. Blair Witch is great. It's all good. Did you see these, Rich? Have a gander at them?
Yeah, and like pretty flawless, like diverse examples. Works really well. It reminds me of also the law that any 90s sitcom clip show is infinitely improved by playing Green Day's Time of Your Life. in the back of it. It's the exact same rule, right?
Yeah,
It's just a song for our age.
Yeah. I like this. So here, I'll do the Matrix. I'm just going to play a piece of it. All right. So you guys can get a taste on the audio here. Here we go. It's only a...
Yeah. For the audio listeners, this is the song Walk of Life.
Correct. Here you go. All right. Oh, wait. This looks like Batman. Oh, I'm being forced to watch an ad. Terrible timing. I'm watching an ad. There's an ad for...
Don't you subscribe to Batman.
Some
YouTube Red?
Air Hogs something something.
My wife works for YouTube.
Well, anyway, there's that. Thank you for the disclaimer. Anyway, moving on. What else is going on? Oh, yeah, Sony.
Sony announced the PlayStation VR headset will arrive in October for $399. It will not come with the PlayStation camera that sells max. You can find it cheaper, but the max retail price is $60. Move controllers are optional. You can use your DualShock controllers if you want, but if you want the Move controller, which gives you a little different approach, those sell separately, again, max of $50. It will launch with at least 5 games. They promise 50 games will be ready by December. And Friday, Sony announced a bundle that includes not just the headset, but also the camera and 2 Move wands, as well as the VR Worlds collection of games. That will cost you $500. Pre-orders start at 10 a.m. Eastern, Tuesday, March 22nd. For the bundle, they haven't announced when you can buy the headset alone or any other bundles. That's coming later in the summer.
I was really glad to hear about the bundle. I was concerned when they first announced it and there was no camera included, and they were a little bit cagey about that. Not cagey, but they just weren't sort of filling in the gaps. And
they didn't announce the bundle is what you're saying.
Yeah, basically.
Like, everybody's like, they were sneaky, they were cagey, they were weird. It's like, no, they announced the headset and its price.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
They didn't go like, well, we might have a bundle or we might not.
What they haven't announced is a bundle with a PlayStation 4 yet. Some expected that.
Which they will. They've said sure they more will. Bundles to come. So, yeah. I don't know why they don't announce them all at once, though. It's a good question.
Yeah, but look at that. $499. That's not bad. You get the headset, the cables, the VR stuff, the helmet, the 2 Move controllers, everything you mentioned. Rich, is this going to push you into the vast new brave world of virtual reality?
I may have laid the groundwork for the spousal approval campaign to get this into our household this morning. Definitely. I've been kind of bullish on the prospects for PlayStation VR just because, as amazing as the Vive and the Oculus look, they're clearly higher resolution. The Vive supposedly has way better hand controllers, although, again, not having used any of these, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. The simple fact that you can just plug it in, it's very simple. There's going to be a whole bunch of, like, you know, 10 and teens that are going to be asking their parents for a VR set. They're going to be seeing these all over the place. And this is the one that the non-tech parents will be able to hook up. Obviously, there is a huge network that's going to want the superior experience, the superior resolution of the Vive, of the Oculus. But something about the simplicity of this, as long as it's not nausea-inducing, and I just saw that PlayStation's putting out all sorts of guidelines for keeping it above 60 frames per second and making sure that to get it certified by PlayStation, they have to have no nausea inducing, too fast movement or something like that. So It seems like they're taking all the steps to make this as accessible as possible. So I am super bullish.
I am too. I'm seriously curious, though, about how they're going to get that whole nausea factor down as broadly as possible, because there's always going to be somebody, right? You can get on an airplane and you may experience zero motion sickness, but the person next to you may be just dying inside slowly from it. How do they ensure that, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, okay. What Sony's not promising is no one will ever experience nausea while doing anything on the. I mean, what they're saying is we've got some guidelines that will reduce your chance of having nausea.
Yeah, and that's good.
And they'll have the weird infographic when you first boot it up, like they had with the Wii, where it's like, don't smack your friend with a Wiimote. You know, it'll have someone like keeling over a bucket.
But how does Nintendo stop anyone from ever smacking someone with a Wii? Mm-hmm.
They're just saying be aware that you could get smacked by a Wiimote.
Yeah. The one weird thing about this is that the Move controllers are cool, and they've always been pretty high fidelity, and they came out at a time in 2011, 2012, whatever it was, as an answer to what was happening with the Wii and its success with motion control, and that all has sort of since gone away. But between Sony and them, it was, you know, the Kinect Sony and Microsoft, the Kinect from Microsoft and the Move controllers from Sony. They have all had sort of all but abandoned those things. I have a pair of them gathering dust in a storage room someplace, which I'm glad now because I won't have to buy those new. But to me, it's a little bit weird to just say, and you can use, it's recommended to use Move controllers with this thing. You know, that thing that barely any of you bought and you all thought was an old thing, and are these still existing? And in a way, it makes you wonder, are these like as good as they can be? Or is this like, am I playing with 2010, 2011 technology here? Like, there's something about that. Like, I feel like at the very least, the PR or the branding could have been something like, I don't know, these are VR controllers based on some of the Move technology. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe they wanted to make sure people knew if they had them, they could just use them. I don't know.
I feel like they could have come up with a better design for the Move controllers. And maybe not. Maybe what they're saying is like, no, all you need is a ping pong ball at the end of a stick. Let's be honest. Mm-hmm. There's not much we could prove. But I feel like they could have done something. It's like, oh, these are a little better designed. They're built specifically for VR. But you could use your old Move controllers if you still have them. They just won't be as good. And I would have totally bought that. Mm-hmm. I would have bought that hook, line, and sinker. And it would have removed this weird, like, oh man, like personally, I never bought the Move controllers because I never needed them for anything I wanted to play. Yeah. And they seemed sort of useless. And now I'm like, oh, you mean I got to go buy those stupid controllers? Like, finally? That's crazy.
Yeah, that part is a little bit weird. And maybe they thought that it was going to upset a base of people who did purchase it and thought, oh, great, now I got to buy new motion sticks that are better than the ones I got. But I don't think enough people did to make a difference. So it's a small thing. It's
yeah,
not
you're
that
not, not going to get the goodwill, I think, even though it would be like the most Sony thing ever to create like another proprietary, you know, motion capture stick that you have to hold or whatever. But I mean, the one thing that I will say is they're the PlayStation Eye camera thing that came with that's part of the PS4 package. I mean, that's their third generation camera product, right? So I feel like they have the idea of tracking you in space or tracking things in space down pretty well, or at least they've been able to test a lot of different systems to see what works. So, I mean, that's honestly, that to me is the most reassuring thing about the system, is that they've kind of been able to like actively play test that for a long time.
Yeah, plus
that's a good point.
You make a good point too, that they've already got. So this is now two accessories, three if you count the Moves as two controller, you know, two different devices, but they have three accessories that already were here and that have already been tested and in use in some way or another to whatever varying degrees of success that are part of this package. It still contributes a little bit, though, to my whole idea of, like, it's like, here's your brand new car. The tires are from 2008, and your steering wheel was made in the 40s, but everything else is brand new, state of the art, buddy. Good luck to you, kind of thing.
But then you got Johnny McCheap over there going, darn right, that steering wheel is just fine. There's no reason to replace it.
I love Johnny McCheap. That guy knows how to. He knows how to pinch a nickel, I'll tell you.
He sure does. In somewhat related news, Microsoft announced it's opening up its network gaming to allow players of games on Windows and Xbox to compete against players on other platforms. Rocket League will be the first to take advantage of this, with Xbox One and PC network play allowed starting later this spring. Microsoft's Director of Independent Developers for Xbox said gamers have the option to play only against other Xbox players. If they want, they can limit it. And then kind of looked over at Sony and said, what's up? Yeah. Sony said the next day, we would be happy to have the conversation with any publishers or developers who are interested in cross-platform play, which we've totally been doing for years.
Yeah, and the game specifically that they've done maybe the most impact with has been this self-same game, Rocket League. Like, Rocket League and the PC player base of Rocket League, those two player bases have been playing since launch day together, intermingled against one another and together. So it's not like Sony hasn't. It's weird the way that they said this. And also, you know, who am I kidding? Sony's response is also a little bit like, nobody will say the name of their chief competitor in this whole thing, which is totally weird to me. I wish Sony would just say, we'd be happy to talk to Microsoft or anyone else who wants to have crossplay. It's okay to say the name of your competitor if you're not trying to.
It's like a sports rivalry, right?
Yeah,
you know,
I guess
it's OSU Michigan. It's you know, Sony Microsoft.
Yeah, I guess yeah. So.
That company across the sea, right?
Right.
But I'm sure the Fighting Illini will do well against that other team from over farther east of the Midwest this weekend.
Well, one of the
it's that pettiness.
One of the nice advantages here. So I've been dabbling a bit in The Division from Ubisoft. Fantastic first effort on that game. I really am impressed with it. I think the beta went really well, and this launch title has been really, really good. And it's a game available as a third-party title on all platforms right now. The idea that your Uplay user tag, which you use to do multiplayer meetups and hangouts with your friends to play together, the idea that that could work across platforms suddenly in theory triples your player base. Maybe not entirely equally on all three sides, but you're going to add a ton of new people that you can potentially play with and hook up with easily, message back and forth with. Like, there's a lot of potential here, and I'm very excited about it. To me, it's like one of those things you've been waiting for years. When are video games going to let us all play together? And when will it quit being about brands and formats? And even VR has come out of the gate trying to do less format wars and more sharing of information, making it possible to port these things across VR experiences. So when console manufacturers finally go, yeah, maybe we ought to make it a little more gamer inclusive and not necessarily try to wall off our garden so hardcore the way we have for the last, you know, four decades. I think that's a good thing. And I'm jazzed about it.
It's really interesting too. Like, if I'm a sysadmin at one of these companies, I'd be like, yeah, man, let Xbox run the servers. Makes it easier on us. Mm-hmm. PlayStation Network goes down, nobody will notice. They'll think it's Microsoft. They'll blame them. But the people in charge of the marketing and the monetization are like, no, we want those relationships. We want people to sign up with Sony. And then, sure, they could then use their Sony ID to go into other places. And Microsoft wants the same. And what Microsoft's doing here is kind of trying to say we're the good guys because we've opened up. But you still have to agree with Sony on how to run those servers and who's responsible for paying for them, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, at the very least, this is Microsoft. Even if Microsoft had just come out and said, we're going to let the Xbox base of players play with PC players with games that are cross-compatible, or, you know, that you can have the platform across, like the way Sony has done with Rocket League with PC players already. If that's all they did, that would have been a step forward. This is a step beyond that, and I have a hard time criticizing them for it. They're in a weird position right now, so they're kind of in a position of having to make strange concessions that seem counter to what they may have done in the past, but this doesn't hurt anyone, and it helps us. And if we're all going to play Rocket League, why not have a bigger bunch of people to choose from? That's what I say.
Yeah.
The only downside that I see to this is that if this takes off and this becomes like a, you know, if Sony works out these relationships, it just makes Nintendo's sad online gameplay somehow even sadder.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do they still do games?
They do. They try. Yeah, I mean, the fact that they're dipping into mobile is going to be interesting to watch and how they.
I do love Nintendo. Yeah. I love Zelda. I love Nintendo, but they've been struggling.
Yeah, they have, and their player code thing and all that. I mean, they have been historically terrible with online anything. They don't seem to know what they're doing. So NX has a lot to figure out on its own. Will it support third party cross platform play? Probably not, is my guess. But I feel like
probably won't be many third-party games for it is more the issue.
Right, but they're like a, what are they like? They're like a super exclusive golf course that you just have to be a member of, and there's no way they're going to let you use somebody else's clubs in there. Like, it just...
Right. There's the country club where you can know a friend, or maybe there's an open house day. Then there's like the super exclusive one that's way beyond the country club. That's Nintendo.
Yeah, and I think they get away with it. Whether they can forever get away with it is arguable, but... Yeah, it's going to be an interesting year for everybody.
You know who's still getting away with it? Edward Snowden.
Oh, really? Good, because he's a guy that has made his whole life is about getting away with it.
You may recall that LavaBit was refusing to hand over some data to the U.S. government. They couldn't even tell what the data was for a while. They were fined up to $10,000 a day for not handing over encryption keys to investigators. They fought long and hard to open up as much about the case as possible, because normally when the FISA court in the United States orders something, you're not even allowed to tell people that the FISA court ordered you to do something. And now we know who those investigators were after. It was Edward Snowden. The court had ordered attorneys to release all documents from the case, but the court also ordered that the identity and email address of the subscriber being investigated be redacted. Yeah. Wired reports that the transparency site Cryptome found an August 2013 document that didn't get properly redacted and revealed that the subscriber in question was, not surprisingly, Ed_Snowden at lavabit.com. Yeah. So, The suspicion was that that's who they were after, but now we know.
Ever the target, Edward Snowden. I'm looking at a photo of him here and being reminded of how young he is and how I think about this sometimes with Edward Snowden, and if Edward Snowden's listening, and surely he's a podcast listener of Current Geek has to be, I would just wonder, how is it to be you? Because you're so infamous, and you're barely, 32 or something? Like, you kind of have your whole life ahead of you. But what is that life? Are you just going to live offshore forever? Is it just going to be, like, what are we doing? Am I ever going to run into you in Hawaii just on the random? Are you going to be able to?
No, you are never going to run into him.
I guess not, right? Like, he's hosed. It's always going to be hosed. Edward Hosden should be his name, right?
Well, that was the weird thing. I just recently watched, what was the HBO doc, Citizen 4, right?
Oh, Citizen.
Yeah. Right. And like watching, like the weirdest moments were when they were releasing the story bit by bit, and you know, he knew it was going to get out, and like seeing just that kind of silent realization. Like, I obviously knew it the second he decided to disclose this information, right? That it would, at some point it was going to get back to him. It was a very high probability that it would. And yeah, being a 30-year-old guy who's, I mean, it's funny, when I was younger, I used to always like, couldn't conceive of how like you could be an 18-year-old like superstar athlete and all of a sudden be a millionaire overnight. And now for me, like, that seems normal compared to the idea of being like the most infamous whistleblower of all time.
Yeah,
like that to me. I mean, he's you know, persona non grata in the United States for forever.
Yeah, and that sucks, kind of. But maybe not. Maybe it's great. Maybe the pastries are good where he's at, and there's just a better way of living. I don't know.
Borscht, the vodka.
All of that.
More vodka.
One day it's going to make for the biggest, most like Oscar-riddled biopic of all time. But I think you got to give it another 20 years. You know, there'll be.
I want to see Ed Helms play Snowden. Right. I think that has to be it.
Be his great dramatic thing. He gets it, like, he's been a comedian forever, but now look at this role. It's like Steve Carell in.
It's a musical.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah.
And it's just called Ed.
And music by the band Snowden.
I'm in.
Yeah, no, if you're right, Scott, and Edward Snowden is listening to this podcast, I just want to say 54, oh, 68, oh, 68,
whoa,
31, oh, 77,
yep,
38.
How did you know me in junior high in my locker password? Because that's what you just gave me. Nicely done.
Hey, Indiana Jones will return to the big screen on July 19th, 2019 for a fifth adventure, many of which have been epic. And some of which have been blockbusters. Steven Spielberg, who directed all four previous films, will helm the as-yet-untitled project, and Harrison Ford will star, reprising his iconic role. Franchise veterans Kathleen Kennedy and Frank Marshall will produce. No word on if Mr. Lucas will be involved in this one.
2019. I want to lay out what that is. That seems like nothing, and it's true. It's only, three years away, 4 years away? Whatever it is. That's a long time.
Conventionally three.
Yeah, and Harrison Ford, yeah. I'm not an ageist. I'm stoked when older actors are getting great work in Hollywood, and I'm happy for him, and I loved him in Force Awakens. And
Harrison
it's all good.
Ford will be 77 when this movie comes out.
It's just a little older than you'd want your epic jumping around whip carrying guy. And if it's just
he just has to do this a lot with his finger.
and most importantly, written by the guy who wrote Crystal Skull. So, I mean, it's going to have that same.
Oh, dear.
Oh, no. Is that true? Is that really? Really?
Hollywood Reporter came out with it about 3 hours ago. I saw.
Why is he allowed to do it? We all saw that last one. That was
bad. All need a chance at redemption, Scott.
let's say he knocks it out of the park. It's the greatest script ever. He gets a screenwriting award next Oscars. He is required by the natural laws of nature to come out and accept it standing inside a refrigerator that is to protect him from a nuclear blast. Because that guy is a terrible writer. That movie was awful. I shouldn't say he's a terrible writer. Maybe everything else he's done is great.
I believe he also wrote Jurassic Park.
Oh, well then, dang it.
He did all right with that one.
He did great with that.
It was okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, his knowledge of Linux systems is clearly top-notch.
Well, yes. His knowledge of biting lawyers off of portable toilets is top of the game.
I can't wait for Mad Jones, Indiana Road.
I'm all
on
in.
July 19th.
The only way this works is if it's like a Taken-style older guy action film where it's just thumbs to the neck and just brutally violent Indiana Jones. Well, that's the only way I want to see Harrison.
Are you afraid, though, that, like, seriously, for real, are you afraid that it's just going to be nothing but old guy jokes the whole time? Because that's what I'm worried about. It's like, oh, I'm too old for this sort of jokes.
I'm afraid it's going to be mediocre, and I don't need a mediocre Indiana Jones film.
Why don't we get the reboot then? I don't even need it to be reboot. Let's just come in with Tom Hardy or almost a Chuck Yeager for some reason. Chris.
You want him to James Bond it?
Yeah. Or not even recast. That. Just give me a young guy.
That's what Shia LaBeouf was supposed to be in Crystal Skull, and that just didn't work.
No, it didn't.
Or just make an Uncharted film because that's what that video game series is anyway. So, I mean, or just come up with another cool adventurer dude, wears iconic clothes and is quippy and is good with women. Like, that's...
Well, here's what I want, and I wanted this last time too, so maybe it's the definition of insanity that I still am trying to expect it to come. But I want Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones to be in this movie and pass the torch. Mm-hmm. and give the next Indiana Jones the blessing. Mm-hmm. and have a plausible way. Doesn't have to be his son. Have a plausible way that, you know, he hands over the hat and the whip, and then they can make movies with Chris Pratt or Tom Hardy or whoever, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I do love the idea of Harrison Ford being there, just like they did with The Force Awakens, mm-hmm. to say, here, let me hand over the Falcon.
That showed a great way of doing it, and they could totally do it here, and I'm with you. And let me just add to your plan. I got a great idea. Doesn't need to be a son. Forget about the father down to son thing. We're getting that in other movies. We don't need that here. It needs to be Steven Yeun, I think is how you say his name, from The Walking Dead, plays what's his name? My brain just went dead. Plays the guy.
Maggie's husband.
Yes, thank you. Well, are they married? Anyway, whatever. Maggie's squeeze. he comes back.
I mean, it's the apocalypse, Sky. We don't put labels on things anymore.
He comes back as Short Round. And says, Dr. Jones, been a while. Yeah, here, you take over. Here's my whip. And now he's the guy. And we follow him around.
Oh, I would love that.
That'd be great.
That's such a good idea.
That's right.
Mind blown.
No time for romance, Dr. Jones. And then whoop, he's out of there. Oh, yeah. And he'd
be
a good actor.
Great Indiana Jones.
He would be.
If he's shown anything in The Walking Dead, is like he can do the action stuff.
Why can't I think of his name in The Walking Dead? Not Carl.
Because... No, Carl's the boy. He is my favorite character in the comic book, too.
Right.
And because you blanked on his name, now I'm blanking on his name.
Frick. I hate that feeling. Anyway, that guy. Chat room will figure it out. But, yes, it's. I'm all about Short Round taking over. And I don't mean this jokingly. I'm actually being honest about this.
Glenn!
What? Oh, his Glenn. Yeah. Glenn. That's right. It's just a name that... Listen, I don't know any Asian guys named Glenn, and my own stereotypes are being at play here, so I will take full responsibility for it. It's fine. Anyway,
is your non-Asian guy named Glenn category full? That would...
Glenn then... with two N's.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I have an Asian brother named Matt, so I don't know why I'm having trouble with this, but anyway, it's fine.
I have an Asian wife who is also not named Glenn.
All right, good. And she works at YouTube.
Yes, she does. Shall we finish up with a story Rich brought in?
Yeah.
A study of rock, paper, scissors played by people against computers found that people over-select rock, while the best strategy would be to just select evenly but randomly. People also tend to stick with the same item if they win. Mm. And they also showed that because they're playing against computers, the strategy of, you know, pick evenly but randomly is the best strategy, unless you're playing against someone who knows this, in which case, then your best strategy to be like, huh, they're probably going to pick rock more often. And if they win, they're probably going to pick the same thing again.
Yeah. I wonder why it is we choose rock more. I wonder what that is. Does the study go into why we do that? Or what the, you know,
trying now, it basically just says, this is what we found, right, Rich?
Hmm.
Yeah, and that's the whole point, is kind of taking the human element out of it and just seeing, you know, so you can't kind of you can't do the jerk brother move, Nick, and look at my hand while I'm trying to beat you at rock, paper, scissors and always come up with paper, jerk.
Yeah, Nick.
You need the computer to just kind of be to take away the human element out of at least one side, then you can kind of look at it. It's interesting that they decided this needed to be studied. Like, that was my favorite part of it. But it's also just like the beautiful, the weird game theory that people have. I'm assuming rock because, you know, there's a weird like psychological associate, stronger. Like, everyone always jokes, like, how does paper beat rock? And maybe that's why, you know, there's the overinflation of the value of rock.
Yeah.
But again, that's just pop psychology.
The photo they use in the article looks more to me like turd, paper, scissors. That's just one thing I wanted to say. And then secondly,
that would cause people to choose rock less.
Oh yeah, I would use rock way less if I. That
I would
the
use
case.
Paper a lot.
That is a disgusting rock.
It's really a gross rock. Second of all, I can smell what the rock is cooking. No, second of all, there's a guy named Uncle Al in the comments of this article that really made my day. He says, if the game is most successfully played by not thinking, limit its exercise to the diverse, the empowered, the self-esteemed, the deserving, and Congress. Good job there, Uncle Al. Anyway, that's you know.
So
it's
should we play?
It's a yeah. Let's do it. You want to do a three-way? Here? Okay. All right.
Ready? Wait, yeah. No, that never works. That never works. All right. Host can.
All right. So you're gonna good judge us here, Rich K. Ready?
I'll be the arbiter.
All right. Ready?
All right. Go. Rock, paper, scissor. Go on, shoot.
Okay. So, ready, Tom? How do we time this?
Yeah.
Ready?
Rock. One.
Okay. One, two, three. Rock, paper, scissors.
I thought we were going on three.
Oh. Okay, let's do three then.
Go on, choose. You said that. All right, here we go. Ready?
Right. Rock, paper, scissors, choose.
For the audio listener, Scott picked paper. Tom picked rock. Scott is the winner.
I used to, when I play with my sister, I would just pick the same thing every time.
Really?
Yeah, so that was always my go-to. Yeah. It was a lot of scissors.
Well, I can't I can't say enough about great articles like this, so thank you for that, Rich. But also, thanks to all our subreddit submitters. You guys are amazing, like Piscator NF and Duncan MacGyver, and I can't pronounce that guy's name. Iceworm, Cap Kipper.
Iceworm 1980, D-Neil 99, and which one couldn't you pronounce? D-Neil?
D-Neil 99. But you got it. Right. Thank you for that. It's real easy. Go to currentgeek.reddit.com and submit your stories today. All right, real quick, we're going to mention our Crate Joy, which we talk about each week. This is how the show...
Hey, you know what I want to tell people they can do,
Scott? Yeah.
They can take us home with them.
Oh, my gosh. I hadn't thought of it that way.
Yeah.
Think of us
Take a little piece of us home with you.
Like a little stray puppy or a turd, paper, scissors or whatever. You could take us home.
You shut a puppy out of a stray puppy home?
Right.
Yeah.
Just a piece.
I mean, do you want the puppy to live outside and die, or do you want to order a Crate Joy?
I think they want to order a Crate Joy. I don't want to speak for people, but I think they are like me, and that's what they would want to do. And if you want a little piece of Tom, a little piece of me, and a little piece of our guests sometimes, a little piece of other bonus material, the Crate Joy is great. You go to frogpants.cratejoy.com, and every month you get a package with a membership card for that month, which is always unique and different. You get prints, you get stickers, sometimes you get books, sometimes you get mystery stuff, sometimes Tom writes things, sometimes I write things. We're getting close to the point where you get the second half of the 2016 illustrated 2044 calendar. So that's coming up soon. All kinds of reasons to check it out and get it. People love it. We see photos all the time, people opening these things and checking them out. We're very proud of it, and it helps the show stay alive. So go over to frogpants.cratejoy.com.
And then you can say, I made the show.
Yes, you're our boss. And here's some music.
America scores and wins.
All right, Rich from lovely Cleveland.
By the way, Ralph in the chat room just said, make America crate again.
That's great. my buddy Adam Coford lives here in Salt Lake City, an amazing artist, works for Disney. He made a T-shirt that is a red hat, and on the front of the hat, it's like a trucker hat, and on the front of the hat it says, make American hats blank again, which I thought was really good. So I hope he gets voted for on Woot or wherever he's doing that. And
why isn't anyone talking about these issues?
Yeah, these are the important ones, really. The hat issue. All right, it's time for us to do a little bit of a pop quiz. We take our guests and we enter into an area of their expertise. We ask them 8 questions in that area. They are to answer them. Tom will keep score. And at the end of it all, we'll see how you do against the average. Your subject today, Richard, is Babylon 5.
Oh, yeah.
We know you're a fan. If you get questions right, if you get them wrong, and in the end, everyone wins. Sort of. Trophy for everyone. Here we go. Are you ready for your questions?
I am more than ready.
Here's your first one. How many seasons of Babylon 5 were made?
Ooh, tough call. Well, I mean, if we're talking about the original show, you go 5. There was Crusades, right, that had 1 or 2, which was horrible, and starred Lumberg from Office Space, but 5 for the original show.
You are correct, sir. 5 is the actual answer. And yes, that weird...
And point for every season, plus 2 points for the bonus information.
Oh, my Lord. You've done well today. Nicely done. What is the name of the first episode of the first season of Babylon 5?
Oh, I mean, if it's the pilot, isn't it The Gathering? I'll say The Gathering.
You're going to say The Gathering? The answer is Midnight on the Firing Line.
Boo.
I have no way to verify this.
I'm going
to
give you a half point for knowing the pilot name.
Yeah. Tom, do you remember that?
The pilot was not named Pilot.
No. Pilot of Babylon 5 is actually a man and not a show. All right. Next question. According to the intro from season, I don't know what they, he wrote this weird. It says, according to the intro from season, it is the dawning of what age of mankind? I think he must mean season one.
Sounds like he left a season number off.
Yeah, he must have. So the dawning of what age of mankind?
The third age.
You are correct. It's the third age. Well done.
Point for every age.
Very, very well done. Here's an actor question. Stephen First, that's a great name, played what character on Babylon 5?
Is it Vir Koto?
You are correct. Vir Koto. I would have said Vir Koto, but I don't know. I have no idea. So you're right.
The show is worth watching just for the inspirational tale of his weight loss during the course of the show.
It's not this guy, right?
This is outrageous!
Is it that guy?
It is not. It is pretty much the opposite of that voice would be Vir Koto.
All right, fine. He's an alien, though, right?
He is a Centauri aide to Ambassador Molari.
And Molari's the big fatty guy with the funny sideburns and the...
With the funny hair, yeah.
You just got a point. Like, just talking. You just got a point.
I will do a Babylon 5 podcast, but no one would be able to stream it to watch. So.
Well, Tom, you should give me a point for referring to that ambassador as the fatty guy.
Scott,
with the
you
weird
get a
hair.
Point.
Okay. Here's your next question. What network did Babylon 5 originally air on in 1994?
It's like one of those weird. It's not UPN. It's like it's U something. It's like U10, UPenn. Something like that. UPenn.
Let's try UPenn. Is it UPenn? Incorrect. It is the Primetime Entertainment Network, or PTEN.
Oh, that one. My favorite.
P10. Well,
that's where I'd go to watch my Andromeda, right? Favorite Kevin Sorbo show.
It really is the better of the Sorbo offerings. I didn't think Hercules was very good, in my opinion.
Had better CGI, but that's not saying much.
That is not saying much at all. All right. What else we got here? Boy, do you remember the fight that this was, though? The Babylon 5 versus Deep Space Nine crowds, man. That was a weird time for sci-fi.
Yeah. Who's the show creator for that? J. Michael, not Unabomber, Straczynski or whatever his name is. Mm-hmm. He pitched Paramount for Babylon 5 and like gave him a series Bible. And he was super bitter because he thought they rushed it into production to put it out there. And I got to say, if I'm going for like the first three seasons, I massively prefer Babylon 5. Mm. But then Dominion Wars kicks in. Deep Space Nine starts getting real good real fast.
Yeah, they're both. Thankfully, we have them both and we can enjoy them both. But
this is true.
I agree with
you. Our sedentary space operas.
Yeah, the ones that exactly stuck on a freaking rotating hoo-ha. They can't get out of there. Like, what's the point? Anyway, here we go.
Yeah.
Next up.
4 points.
What is the name of the final episode of Babylon 5?
The final episode. I have no idea.
All right.
So I will say Dawn on the Firing Line. I have no idea.
You know, it's funny. You're kind of in the neighborhood. It is Sleeping in the Light. Light being in the dawn. Dawn may have worked a little bit in my head, but you're incorrect. Sleeping in the Light is the correct answer. Tom, anything weird there with the scoring? Just straight up.
Nothing weird. Everything's perfectly fine here. We're all fine here.
How are you?
How are you doing?
All right, great. In season 5, John Sheridan becomes the president of what group?
The Interstellar Alliance, the very creatively named. Is that it? Interstellar
Alliance. You are correct, sir. Nicely done. The Interstellar Alliance. Very creative. They stayed up all night for that one, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Final question. Here's number 8. What was the name of the Babylon pilot film that aired in 1993?
Is this The Gathering?
You are correct, and that's the one we saw, Tom. That's the one you and I saw, I think.
With the giant awkward guns?
Yes.
Right. And the Bruce Willis hair on Jerry Doyle, his horrible, weird, spiky hair.
Yep, it was weird. I remember enjoying it.
It was outrageous.
Yeah, it was outrageous. And that's where they got that line, that this is outrageous line, I believe. I think he was in there.
This is outrageous!
Oh, such a great line. Well, I'll tell you what's outrageous. Your domination of today's questioning. Tom, how did he do?
Well, we had a little bit of technical difficulties in scoring headquarters here. Computer locked up, had to reboot real fast.
Oh.
But in the end, extrapolating through some quantum modeling, We reconstructed the missing part, and he finished with 18.5.
Okay. I didn't even know you were gone. I am so non-observant. You really handled that well. I had no idea you were gone. That's really weird. Like, you were always there when I had to ask you something. You were just like, yeah.
It's amazing how fast the solid-state drive boots these days.
Changed my life. All right. Excellent work. Way to go. That's a pretty high score, and it only leaves room for this now.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Well, not entirely. We have an email after this, but it's time for forecast, where we predict the future, and sometimes we are real simple about it, like, oh, in 20 months, we'll be all wearing VR headsets, or something crazy, or more esoteric, like perhaps today's. Richard, you submitted it. Why don't you tell us what you think is going to happen?
Sure. I think within, and I have to say, I come at this, my moniker that I use on all my social medias is Mr. Anthropology. I studied anthropology. I didn't get anything that I can call myself a doctor or anything, so I just go by Mister. So I'm always thinking culturally, and all the stories of AI in the news, I got to thinking that within 20 years, I think we're going to see AI culture become an observable and studyable phenomenon, both in terms of like the human interface with the AI, but also like on a baseline functional level of the AI, not necessarily something human facing, but within different AI systems, we're going to see cultural differences.
Interesting. So, but it'll be basic stuff at first, especially at first, right? Like these, I don't know, Internet of Things protocols interact in a certain way with something else, and we can observe very simple interactions and back and forth, right? We're not talking about complex sort of hierarchical sort of stuff like we can observe with humans.
Machine learning is kind of working with AI systems, and how, I mean, we're seeing with the AlphaGo project. I mean, that's one very specific single use thing. But whenever you have something kind of training itself and interacting with people and learning from them and kind of incorporating that within its corpus of knowledge or its functionality, I think because it's being based off of human interaction and humans are inescapably cultural beings, that will become reflected within AIs. I think without a doubt. Now, because of globalization, if these AIs, you know, are using multicultural systems of learning or on the, you know, access to the internet, this gets into a little bit singularity conspiracy theory territory, but I just think whenever you have something that's being made by beings of culture, which we humans are, again, inescapably caught up in, it will be reflected as a cultural product.
Interesting. I really like the idea of this. It sounds esoteric, but I'm not so sure now. I think it sounds maybe even practical at some point. Like what you see, you hear experiments now where people will pit OK Google and Siri and Cortana or whatever against each other in some little experiment where they're all you're trying to ask them all questions and see what they do, or they're asking each other questions, or you're comparing data. I mean, that's the proto version of what you're talking about, really. You know?
Yeah, that's on the human interface side, certainly. And, you know, those come from a very, you know, the whole idea of a virtual assistant is, you know, you have to have the idea of, you know, an assistant within your, you know, your frame of reference for that to kind of make sense. I think it'll get much more interesting when it's in ways that we can't necessarily predict how that will affect functionality, and maybe a little scary also at the same time. But,
So Tom, do you think because we have anthropomorphized these things so much in 20 years, we'll be able to study them as a subset of our culture, or at least their culture?
The machine intelligences of the Alienware have never interacted with anyone outside of the Linux operating system. Let's watch.
All right, listen, if there's a way to make David Attenborough live that long, I'm all in on your future. That sounds great.
I think you just, that's it. We make David Attenborough into a machine intelligence. He lives forever.
Yes, I would love
and then
that.
He goes in and documents all of this stuff as it happens.
Oh, that's great. Here we see the mail. Oh, I'd be all in. I'd be all in on
AI. You mean Attenborough intelligence.
That's right. That's the one. Yeah, I don't know. Lately, I've been hearing a lot about this, so you're singing my language.
Well, and it also kind of came from considering, like, even like on a super basic level, like I've always been wondering why we haven't seen like a cultural breakdown of programming languages. You know, like I'm sure if we get into it, and that's like a super structuralist argument that I'm not going to bore people with, but those again are products of a specific culture, and I'd love to see like what cross-culturally how programming languages differ. Obviously, it all revolves around a baseline logic, but how, you know, you go about that, I think would be like super fascinating. Guys, if you need a master's thesis, I'm here.
You're here. You're ready. So, okay, if you're right about our future, here's one other question I would just throw out there that deals with this and it's worth maybe discussing. Do we ever get away from, do we ever abstract out of the things that are familiar to us? In other words, we make personal assistants because we know what a real assistant is. It's someone who assists us, and they have often a female voice for some reason we've decided with our devices. And indeed, you can change some of them to male, but we're very like, there are folders on my desktop and files within those folders. Those aren't abstracted out very much from things that we understand and know. There's obviously benefits to that because it can make it easier for somebody like, I don't know, my mother, who grew up with actual folders and files, to understand this transition to digital and go, oh, folders and files, I get it. We're kind of recreating an interface that's familiar in that way. But do we ever finally just kind of break free of that and go for full abstraction? Go for the kind of thinking that is not just, well, this reminds me of a trash can, therefore this is where you put your deleted items and you can empty your trash can at the end of the day. Do you know what I mean?
I hear what you're saying. And I think if we do, we won't be talking about machine learning. We'll be talking about human learning, where, you know, we're learning to emulate more of a machine style or an abstracted style, like a purely logical style of thinking. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. Again, I don't want to get into like crazy conspiracy theory or like doomsday singularity talk. But I think as people get more and more comfortable with that kind of abstraction, you're going to need some kind of frame of reference, right? Mm-hmm. And you're always going to be limited by how you interface, whether it's through a keyboard or virtual reality or, you know, whatever, you know, some kind of neural networking that'll come in, you know, the dystopian future. But maybe at some point I wouldn't be surprised. But again, it won't be us teaching machines through our actions. It'll be machines teaching us through their actions, maybe.
And it will have to be a cultural change. We've put ourselves in the trap of teaching ourselves that the way you interact with a computer is through a file system interface, to the point that when we try to change it, so many of us are ingrained in it that we don't like the new interface. Mm-hmm. Even if it demonstrably over time would end up being better, people don't like to have to go through the learning curve of adapting. So, it's going to be a long, difficult process. It's really intriguing to think, could a machine intelligence teach us how to use a new and better interface faster? Yeah. Because they're smarter than us.
Yeah. It's like it's that old thing where if in 1994 you took away my giant brick phone that I was using that was giving me 8 kinds of cancer all at once or whatever, and then
No, phones have not been shown by any evidence to cause any kind of cancer, right, ever.
The phone that was hard to hear and heavy and battery life sucked and it cost $3,000 there. Those were all truths about that phone. But anyway, I'm holding that phone, and if somebody walked up to me and said, oh, what are you doing? Here, give me that. Took it out of my hand and put an iPhone 6S Plus in my hand and said, here you go. I would have burned him like a witch because I wouldn't, you know, it's too fast. It's like, whoa, hold on. What is this?
It would have been a 2001 moment, right? You just touch it and then like start hitting it with a bone and stuff
like
that.
Which is why it took so long to develop that, because people kept getting burned as witches when they developed it in 1995.
Right. I don't know. I'm fascinated by that stuff, but great prediction. Thanks for bringing that to us. We also get emails from folks at home. And you send us emails to this address, currentgeek@gmail.com. I got one from Aussie Alex, I assume from Australia. Down under, he does say that. It says this: Scott and Tom, I keep hearing VR being mentioned on almost every tech-related podcast. My 14-year-old daughter has photosensitive epilepsy caused by flashing lights. As a result, she cannot watch any 3D movies and cannot go to places that use strobe lights, such as concerts. My question is, have any of these manufacturers tested their technology against people with issues such as epilepsy, or is that something that doesn't occur to them as it's not part of their targeted market. My daughter can play games on the PC or consoles in about 30-minute stints, and then she has to be, or then has to take time away. Thank you for your time and answers from the land down under, where everything can kill you, Aussie Alex.
The answer is yes. All of them acknowledge that there are risks to people who suffer from seizures, and most of the warnings that I was able to find online specifically mention epilepsy as one of those risks. Mm-hmm. The problem is, if flashing lights can trigger a seizure in you, there's not much they can do, because this is no different than any other screen. It's just put in front of you.
Yeah.
So it's not like suddenly virtual reality can change it so that it's easier for you. If you have problems with the kind of screens that are on computers these days, you're going to have the same problems with VR.
Yeah. They're all touting 90 megahertz refresh rates. Megahertz?
Wait, am I saying is that right? True?
Yeah. They all are saying that. Sony,
I think it's just hertz.
So, is maybe just hertz. I'm sorry, 90 hertz. That's what I meant. And
that would be very fast.
And the PlayStation VR is claiming 90 and 120. Regardless of all of that, that's supposed to be the magic space where this is minimized. This is what they've been saying, that it will minimize the impact of this potential, just like TVs with better refresh rates will. And it also goes a long way to fix that whole I'm nauseated, get this thing off of me problem that a lot of people are going to have. So I don't know that she'd be at it. I mean, we're not experts, and this is yet to play out, and we kind of need some real world, stuff to happen before anyone really knows any of this. Maybe sure. Some post-release tests or whatever. But it sounds like you're not going to be any greater risk with her than you would be with TV or video games, portable console.
Right. These are whatever. Just OLED screens with modern refresh rates.
Right. So it's,
although I don't, again, not knowing how epilepsy works, because you have two different images with theoretically overlapping
question. Yeah.
You know that, I don't know how that would affect it.
Yeah.
That's why we need to see this and test it. But to Aussie Alex's direct question, are they considering these? Yes, absolutely.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. They kind of have to. There's a lot of issues. There's color blindness.
That doesn't
issues.
Mean they'll
There's...
be able to fix it, though, unfortunately. Right, I mean, right. That's a different thing. You know, it's funny. One of the things I was looking up just now, back on January 7th, someone asked the same question about accessibility for blind users on VR, which you might think, well, hold on, you can't even see the screen. Mm-hmm. But there are lots of projects underway to create descriptive visuals or some kind of haptic feedback so that blind users could access virtual reality. So I couldn't find anything in a quick search for Aussie Alex, but there may be some people working on projects to minimize it for seizure-induced risk even farther.
Yeah, and as it is with current video games and other sort of polygonal experiences on computer screens or whatever, some are going to be an experience where you walk into a building and all the lights are flashing because there's a zombie apocalypse or something, and the lights are barely working. And so
you got great furniture.
Yeah, that's right. But you may have
You said polygonal. Sorry.
Polygonal. Yeah. So if you look at it from that perspective, you're really in the same kind of boat here, where you have to be selective based on the content. And I'm guessing they're all going to have warnings like this current stuff does. I was playing The Division yesterday. Very first thing that popped up was an epilepsy warning. Having gone through this myself with my daughter when she was 13, she had a case of it that was a temporary brought on by puberty thing that only lasted a couple of years. So it was clinically, I forgot the name of it, but focal something, seizure something. Anyway, she was very susceptible to flashing lights and even glints of sunlight off of cars. So we had to be very careful during that time. In her case, it's something that went away on its own. But I would love to actually hear from people who have either experienced this or have messed around with the current dev kits, and, you know, fill us in a little bit more. So you can send us an email and let us know. Thank you, Aussie Alex, for your email, and best of luck in the VR world. Yeah. That's going to do it for the show. What an incredible episode brought partly upon ourselves because we had a great guest. Richard, please tell us what's going on in your life. What do you do? Where can people find more of you?
You can listen to Daily Tech News Show for arguably annoying emails from Rich from lovely Cleveland. You can also check out my podcast, The Novelization Realization Project, which is where me and a guest will read a novelization, we'll watch the movie, and we will talk about the differences and how fun, bad, otherwise the novelization is. Novelizations like Face Off that we have right here. We just did the Cabin in the Woods one, just posted last week, which Marketplace's own Jenny Josephson nice enough to guest on. So that's going to be fun. And then we post them once a month, and the next month is going to be Star Trek, the motion picture.
Oh my gosh.
So that should be a ton of fun. So check that out. Novelizationrealization.tumblr.com or in iTunes.
That's awesome. I love this whole concept.
I have had the honor of being a guest and discussed the Star Wars novelization of the original, like A New Hope novelization.
Oh, wow. It's a privilge.
The Face Off has a novelization? Like the you're talking
yeah,
about
Face Off,
Travolta,
Nick
Cage.
On a plane.
Oh my gosh.
I got the terrible Lost in Space.
Wow.
One right here. So
the remake.
Yeah.
The novelization of the remake, mind you.
Yeah, the Joey from Friends one, right? That's the one.
I have a novelization of one episode of TNG, All Good Things, the last episode.
Oh,
come
man.
On.
Weird. All right, I may have
That's part of the joy of it, is finding why someone would make a novelization. The terrible The Wolfman movie.
Yeah. I can't believe
it's keep on coming.
I'm a big nerd fan for Face Off the movie, but I cannot believe there's a novelization of that. That thing is thin as runny cheese. There's like no way that's a good book. So now I'm super intrigued.
Oh no. Oh, certainly not. And you guys, there's pictures in it.
That's great.
Oh, so
you
good.
Can't escape John Woo, even if you try. All right. Well, that's awesome. Please do check that out. Where can they find you on Twitter? You may have said, I may have missed it.
At Mr. Anthropology, MR Anthropology. And same thing on Snapchat. If you want to see me go bowling once a week and down at WRUW on Sunday mornings, you can find my amazing Snapchat.
Awesome. Well, who wouldn't want that? Tom Merritt, anything else going on in your neck of the woods?
Well, first of all, I do enjoy watching you go bowling, and especially the WRUW snaps. I'm always like, oh, what's he playing this week? It's really cool. I also just put out a book called A Brief Guide to Cord Cutting on Amazon Kindle. So if you are looking for something that just kind of lays out all the facts, like what's the equipment that's available, what are the services that are available, how do I decide what stuff I need, either for yourself or for a loved one or a friend, go to Amazon, search Brief Guide to Cord Cutting, and look for my Brief Guide to Cord Cutting, or you can find it linked at TomMerrittBooks.com.
Very nice. If you're looking for more books even, you can find my collected comic collection, now available in both hard and soft covers on the Frog Pants store, because we fulfilled all the Kickstarter stuff. If you're still out there and Yay. Haven't got yours, it may still be coming. You may live in some far-flung part of the world, but they are coming if you haven't. Everyone else should have gotten theirs. Tom, you got yours, right?
Yeah, I did. It's awesome.
Yeah, I'm very, very proud of it. If you want to get your own copy now, there's still time at frogpants.com/store. And I think that's going to do it. Andrew Allen does our music. Alan Andrew does our music. Big thanks to him for our theme. You can leave us voicemails at 801-471-0462. Emails at currentgeek@gmail.com. Currentgeek.reddit.com is our Reddit. On Twitter, Ace to Tech, Scott Johnson, and Current Geek for the show. Currentgeek.com for everything else. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and our guest. We'll see you next time. Oh, you just barely got it in. Nice job.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we take a look at a new lawsuit seeking to stop distribution of recent superhero movies using facial animation technology, including the wildly successful Deadpool and last year's Avengers: Age of Ultron. MOVA is a technology which extends the now well-known concepts of motion capture for actors to more accurately capture the facial expressions and performances of human actors playing CGI characters. Examples of this are the CGI characters Ultron and Colossus. The technology was deemed so revolutionary that MOVA won a Technical Academy Award last year for it, but the wide praise and commercial success has unfortunately led to a court dispute over who is the rightful owner of the tech. The history of MOVA's development and ownership has become quite a tortured mess. Steve Perlman is a serial entrepreneur in Silicon Valley, and he controlled an online game startup called OnLive, which merged with MOVA in 2011. The startup was struggling in 2012, so Perlman left the company to produce another opportunity with a new company called Reardon. When OnLive decided to sell MOVA's assets later that year, Perlman tasked one of his Reardon employees with acquiring MOVA for his new company. That's where the plot twist occurs. According to Perlman, this employee negotiated instead to improperly sell MOVA's assets to a different company called Digital Domain and a Chinese sister company. The Chinese company, which is on the other side of this court dispute, instead claims that the employee properly sold the rights to MOVA to them because Perlman had given up on it. So Perlman claims he was defrauded by an employee, while the Chinese company claims this is nothing more than a severe case of seller's remorse. The decision in this case will come down to a very specific set of facts yet to be proven about what Perlman's previous employee was authorized to do. But the larger question for movie nerds is whether Perlman has any chance of succeeding in stopping distribution of movies like Deadpool, Terminator Genesis, and Guardians of the Galaxy based on what he calls an improper use of his unlicensed patented technology. That type of order implicates First Amendment issues as well as patent issues, so experts who have publicly opined on this case have largely concluded that there's no way Perlman will be able to obtain such an order for movies already in the marketplace. His lawsuit could affect future projects that Digital Domain and the Chinese company are involved in. The bottom line is, cases like this come up when business people play fast and loose with agency of employees and contracts. So make sure you are always abundantly clear when doing deals or making important decisions in business. Getting caught up in a real-life courtroom drama like these parties is usually much worse than making an ill-advised business deal and living with the consequences of such a deal. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.